Hi, and welcome once again to From the Center, a podcast by the Center for Western Studies. I'm Jack Vow, on faculty at the Center for Western Studies, joined as always by my friend and colleague, the director of the Center for Western Studies. Always got to get the prepositions correct on that one. John Hodges, sir, how are you doing?
I'm well, Jack. I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. It's Christmas time.
It's so. Getting there, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. It's Advent. But.
Good for you. That's exactly right. We get 4 weeks of Advent before Christmas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Christmas doesn't actually start till the 25th, huh?
That's right, and then it goes for 12 days.
I've heard of that song.
Uh-huh. Most people don't know that Christmastide lasts 12 days.
That's right. That's right.
We should really institute a thing where you have to get presents all 12 days.
Yes, 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 yes. Turtle doves and all things that were,
If it was me, I would say buy everyone 24 presents, and then they get two a day.
That's a nice idea.
Christmas parties for 12 days.
Not that sort of multiplication thing that they do, right? Where the first day you get a partridge in a pear tree, but the second day you get two turtle doves and a partridge. So by the end, you've got 12 partridges and 12 pear trees, right?
Oh,
but you've also got, 12 pipers piping and 11, whatever they were, lords a-leaping that every week you get, every day, you get another 11 lords of-leaping for a couple of days.
When you said multiplication, I thought it was going to be like, so the first day you get one part of the gift, and the next day you get a second part, you have to build it over 12 days.
Well, that would make sense. Maybe, give them an airplane. One wing at a time. Here's a wing, here's a nose cone, No, that's right. But you know what would be really good is if we could be grateful for the presents that we get.
Mm.
I'm thinking about thankfulness. After all, we just passed Thanksgiving,
didn't we? Just finished Thanksgiving, also known as Christmas Part 1.
right. Just before Thanksgiving, actually, probably back at Halloween, they started putting up Christmas decorations.
Always.
So you have to start thinking about Christmas.
I blame capitalism.
That dirty, rotten capitalism.
How dare it enforce Christmas before Halloween?
Absolutely. But it makes sense to actually think about being thankful at Thanksgiving, obviously. But maybe there's a reason for thankfulness. Maybe there's a reason for Thanksgiving. What I mean is, Thanksgiving is a moment where we actually spend, focused time, if we do, on what we have and why we're grateful for our lives and the details of our lives.
Yeah, it's not just a big meal celebrating the founding of the country,
or right?
The Constitution, more specifically. Let me put it this way: there's a weird disconnect that happens, I think. And one of the biggest examples, an example I can use is the phenomenon of Friendsgiving. You ever heard of this?
Friendsgiving,
which is instead of, you have Thanksgiving, but rather with family, you have it with friends.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Sure.
And on that basis alone, it's fine. I mean, maybe some people live far away from their family and they can't get home, but this is when I have Thanksgiving, so they get a bunch of their friends who also live far away. You could see college kids or people who have moved far away could do it. It's fine.
Yeah.
I also know that the inception, I don't know if it's the inception of Friendsgiving, but one of the reasons Friendsgiving gets used the way it is because you would rather have Friendsgiving because you don't want to go home and deal with your family. Your friends are more of a family than your family ever was, especially if they voted the wrong way, in the last election, or even it's all in November, so if they voted wrong, quotation marks in my hand, earlier that month, then maybe you don't want to deal with them later that month.
Oh boy!
So the irony is that for some people, like I said, some people do Friendsgiving just because it's fine, but there are some people who use Friendsgiving. Who do Friendsgiving precisely because they are unthankful for their family. But thankful for their friends. So there's this weird sort of, I know if I'm going to have a meal with somebody, I'd rather have it with people I like. And there's not a connection between, we come together and we appreciate a bounty, right? But even, my goodness, even the bounty part is troubled, isn't it? I mean, it seems like every time this...
Okay. I feel guilty for having all these things,
it's
you mean? Could you get frustrated about something for me?
Yes, I'm about to get...
Early on, would you?
Yes, I'm about to get frustrated
about something. Good.
I mean, I kind of... I get over it in some ways because I just mainly ignore it because it's so stupid. But just to articulate it, one of the things that frustrates me about this time of year, the holiday time of year, we're getting Thanksgiving, and Christmas time is those pretentious moral busybodies who feel like it's their job to tell everyone how consumerism and capitalism have ruined Thanksgiving Christmas, and the only reason you're able to, you know, eat your turkey is because it was culled from land stolen by Indians, and the only reason, you know, while you're eating your massive amount of gluttonous food, there are children starving elsewhere, and you don't care because you're a dirty American.
Right.
And there's this idea that, so like the idea of like the one of the fundamental ideas of Thanksgiving, like the popular idea, like technically speaking, George Washington founds it as like thanking God for the existence of the country and the survival of the country.
Right.
Right. But in the popular imagination is because of the pilgrims being able to survive when they first came over and the Indians helped them out. And after they had their first big feast or harvest, they invited the Indians over and they had this big feast thanking God for that they were all able to survive.
Right. And actually, there was great peace for the next 50 years between the Indians and the settlers.
Right. They saw each other as friends.
That's right.
So the popular conception is this: we thank God for this bounty that he has provided. So that's sort of been like the, I guess, in the popular consciousness. Why are we thankful? Because we're thankful that we live in this country and look at all the bounty that we have. Well, for the last 50 or 60 years, it's been the job of certain people who feel it is their moral impetus to do so to basically cast shade, I think it is, or cast some, throw shade upon
On
the very idea of American bounty.
Uh-huh.
You know, that all of
that
our
it's
goods,
inherently immoral.
Right. All of our goods are tainted goods. We all appreciate things for the wrong reason. You know, every year around Christmas, I feel like I missed this last year, but typically every year around Christmas, I repost this Facebook post that I did years ago. I keep reposting it because I still think it's true, reminding everybody that giving gifts at Christmas is okay because that's the point, because Christmas is about a gift that was given to us and that we receive. So
right.
We celebrate it by giving and receiving gifts.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I would get so annoyed at people who feel like their job is to guilt trip everybody and the fact that, you know, the only reason you give presents is because of unfettered capitalism. It's just like, you know what? Sometimes we give presents because Jesus was born. How about that?
That's a good reason.
And so it is like today it's like I feel like it's good to talk about thankfulness and gratitude as concepts and why they matter, not just in the light of Thanksgiving. I mean, we can use Thanksgiving as an example, but just why it matters, why gratitude is good and why thankfulness
Excellent.
Is good
yes.
in and of themselves.
Yes.
And
right.
set that up as a context for why, you know, if God has blessed you with things, if things have been blessed in your life, that okay, fine, if you wanted to dig into the nitpickiness of the history of it, maybe you can find problematic things. But pausing to be thankful, period,
yeah.
is a good in and of itself. And even if you want to criticize, I don't know, whatever nitpicky, picky things you want to criticize, it can't be at the expense of being thankful, period. Which I think is one of the, you know, the problematics of like how they view history and how we got all our wealth and stuff is an entire issue. For me, regardless of where you fall on that, if your argument about it causes everybody to forget about thankfulness, period,
yeah.
or to act like somehow thankfulness itself is a tainted act,
yeah.
that's bad.
Yeah.
Because thankfulness and gratitude are good in and of themselves.
Don't you think that on the front end, a lot of people have a wrong idea about material wealth anyway? That
yeah.
What I'm thinking is, if you've got this idea that there's a fixed amount of wealth in the world, then if one person has a lot of stuff, you think it's a little bit unfair because it ought to be equally distributed throughout the world where many people don't have that anywhere near that much, you see. So for one person to say, I'm grateful for what I have, sounds a little bit, you know, self-absorbed and numb to other people's suffering.
Yeah, imagine like a big
so
pie
on.
And everybody gets a slice of pie, but some guy gets like a fourth of it, and everybody
yeah.
else gets like little one.
Everybody else gets
of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then that guy with the one fourth is like, I thank thee, Lord, for my.
Yeah.
Don't you think the guys with like the 1/80th size slices are just going to be a little bit grumbly
sure.
about it? Like,
sure. But I think the whole picture of that fixed pie is itself a problem. So I don't want to turn this into a discussion about economics, but the pie itself actually gets larger when we do the right things. For example, if I'm a farmer and I have, one ear of corn. That's all I've got. Yeah. And I can take the seeds off of that ear of corn and plant them in the ground with the proper fertilizing and the watering and all that stuff. Then that one ear of corn becomes many, many ears of corn over the course of time, right? Well, the same way with a lot of other aspects of wealth in the world, that it's possible to invest time, energy, money, expertise into a particular thing and have it reap benefits, reap fruit, figuratively and literally. And the growth that comes from that does not in any way take away from the amount that somebody else has. It's actually multiplied, right? Loaves and fishes is a miracle, but it's not that different than what reality is. If you plant, then you reap the benefits of it, right? So unless a seed falls to the ground and dies, it will never bear fruit, we're told. So if we just stored our corn in a barn somewhere and never planted it again, it would get smaller and smaller and smaller.
Or we bury our talent in the ground instead
exactly
of
right.
and turning it into more money.
So there's a principle out there about wealth that I think people don't understand. It actually does multiply without requiring anybody else to lose. So that's that single thing. So if you change the format of the thing to begin with, then you can allow, I think, Thanksgiving without the sort of attached resentment that comes from what seems to be a numbness to other people's suffering.
And I think bringing that up is important. And it's its own discussion, but it's important to bring it up here because gain is a part of gratitude and Thanksgiving. All right?
That's right.
You're thankful for the stuff you've been given.
That's right.
Because, Thanksgiving, if we were, working with, a fundamental, trying to dissect the idea, it's you're thankful because, why? Well, because I've been given all this bounty. Well, what do you mean? Well, it's like there was a time when I didn't have it, and now I do.
Right.
Right? Or you recognize that even if I've had something continuously, this thing is not ultimately my doing.
Right.
It wasn't on me. Ultimately. For instance, when I say I'm thankful for my wife, I'm thankful for specific things she does and stuff, but I'm thankful for her existence in my life, which ultimately was not on me.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, yes.
You didn't make her.
That's the thing. It's I dated her. Yes, I wooed her. Yeah, and yes, and so on and so forth. But I didn't make her.
Sure.
Right? And us meeting was more orchestrated by friends than by me. And even beyond all that, she's the one who said yes.
Right.
Right? So even on that point, I still can't claim for myself this the Satan and all that, the self-begot, self-raised. I
mean, yeah.
That's almost the essence of ingratitude right there. Right?
Yeah.
Self-begot, self-raised.
That way I don't have to be grateful to anybody else.
Because I got it all from me, right?
That's right.
So
when I say
I'm thankful for my wife, I'm admitting on some end that my wife is not my fault. her presence in my life is not ultimately my doing, even if I might have been somehow involved in the process. It's not ultimately on me. So thankfulness admits that, A, there was a time when I didn't have this, and now I have it, and I'm glad I have it. But, B, I didn't get it myself.
Mm.
Right? So there was a lack, and then I got a gain, but the gain came from outside myself.
Well, that outside yourself part of it is essential, isn't it? Mm. How can you be grateful for something if you did get it yourself?
Yeah,
gratefulness is toward someone else, something outside of yourself. And so to say that God was involved is essential. It's Thanksgiving, but it's not just Thanksgiving in general. It's Thanksgiving to God for a wife or for a beautiful place to live or another million things that we'll probably list as we discuss these things. Well, I was just looking at a couple of articles, one from Harvard Health Publishing. From the Harvard Medical School. And in it, it says, gratitude is something that psychologists have been researching a lot in the last few decades. There's a doctor at the UC Davis and another at the University of Miami that they quote here, and another from University of Pennsylvania, all saying that gratitude is something that actually brings health. you actually are more physically healthy if you are grateful. And they together here give a few ways to cultivate gratitude in our lives. They say, write a thank you note to somebody. Mm. Strange thing for Harvard Medical School to say something. Your mother would teach you that.
Yeah, I know. This isn't like some blog post on Joe Schmo's advice for life or something.
Right,
like that.
This is Harvard Medical School saying that a really good idea is to write thank you notes. You can make it, I'm quoting it now, you can make yourself happier and nurture your relationship with another person by writing a thank you letter expressing your enjoyment and appreciation of that person's impact on your life. Mm. Send it, or better yet, deliver it and read it in person if possible. Then it says, thank someone mentally. No time to write? It may help to think about someone who has done something nice for you and mentally thank that person. Imagine, it's not just being nice to somebody else. It's an attitude that you have inside your head. You don't even have to write it down. You could just think it. Keep a gratitude journal, it says. Make a habit of writing down or sharing with. This sounds almost like a Hallmark card commercial or something, right?
It does, right? It sounds very... If you're cynical, it sounds hokey, but then it's the Harvard Medical School saying, after years of psychological research, we have concluded gratitude makes you happy.
Makes you happy. Count your blessings. It even says, pray.
Ah.
Strange, huh? People who are religious, it says, can use prayer to cultivate gratitude. Well, that's surprising to me, but I think they are onto something. There's another article I was just reading that said some of the benefits. There were 7 benefits it gives of being grateful. One of them is that it can make you more patient. Being patient is a virtue.
Yeah.
Gratitude might improve your relationships with people. Well, I think that's Harvard said that too. It says gratitude can help you sleep. What a great idea. If you're stewing and worrying and upset about things all the time, finding a way to be grateful maybe can help you sleep. I remember my mother telling me, count your blessings and you'll fall asleep. Was that old Bing Crosby song in White Christmas, count your blessings instead of sheep? Have you ever seen White Christmas?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that song.
I shouldn't start this without being able to get the lyrics down. When I'm... something and cannot sleep, I count my blessings instead of sheep, and I fall asleep counting my blessings. That's how the song goes. When I'm anxious, and that's it. When my bankroll is getting small. Anyway, it's a Hallmark card. But maybe there's some depth to this, some truth to this that we aren't taking seriously. Gratitude, it says here, can ease depression. It can help you from overeating. It can help you be happy. What an idea. But what if you were just concerned all the time that you are responsible for your life, that you have to make everything work out? The stress of that, the anxiety of that is so overwhelming. If you don't have somebody outside of yourself to be thankful to whom you might be thankful, how can you even cultivate gratitude if you yourself attribute all of your accomplishments, whatever you might be happy about, to yourself? Can't they also be lost?
Yeah, what I was thinking of as you were going through those list of things is all those things seem connected to or causes of or are caused by anxiety in some way.
Right.
Right? It's like gratitude is a cure for anxiety. It's like, okay. That sounds very Hallmarky, but it's like, but if you think about it, it's like, why? Well, again, gratitude, you're grateful for something. Why? Well, because you have it, but you used not to, and it was given to you from the outside,
yes.
Right, from somewhere else.
Right.
Well, what does that mean? Well, it means that somebody was looking out for you.
Yeah.
Right? Well, if that's the case, then you can't be grateful unless it's grateful to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so if you count your blessings, if you if you take a moment to be grateful, it's being grateful for things, but grateful to a person.
Right.
And I could see why that would be helpful to anxiety. Because as you said, if it's actually all on you, like your survival and your stability and your everything is all on you, that sounds like a not just sounds like it, but it is a recipe for utter anxiety and anxiousness. Mm-hmm. You know, you have no other support system, no structure. It's all on you. And if you screw up, the whole opera falls apart and it's all your fault, right? You could see how that, to know that it's all hanging on you, would make you feel like you're about to fall to pieces.
Well, yeah.
And so to be grateful is like, grateful is almost like a way of reminding you you're not alone.
Exactly. Maybe it actually works the other way around. Not so much that you have to think, well, I have to make myself think that there's a God, or even my parents or my friends that have done things for me, and I have to start thinking about things. But maybe if you turn it around and say, what can I be thankful for? And you start counting those blessings. It leads to a recognition of others, those that are outside of you, including God.
Yeah. There's a song by Stephen Curtis Chapman that I love, so, you know, don't at me, you haters out there. you know, by love, I mean, like, I kind of moved on from good old Steve because, you know, my taste developed and matured. But as I became more pretentious and snotty.
Good. That's always a good thing.
It's always a good thing to become more pretentious and snotty. But there's some, the ones I know that I loved are the ones that never left. Like, you know, I can always go back to them and still get something out of them. And there was one, there's a song of his called I Am Found in You.
Uh-huh.
And there's a line in there, it's like it's the beginning of the second verse. He says that I may not see in front of me, but I can see for miles when I look over my shoulder.
Oh, lovely.
And he says, and Lord, it's clear you brought me here, faithful every step of the way. And so it's like, it's almost like that dynamic. It's like you look out into the future and it's all unknown and unsure, and that could be anxious unless you look back and, you know, counting the miles over your shoulder is like counting your blessings. If you know that the only reason I made it this far is because God brought me here, which means God exists, which means, and God cares and is taking care of me. So that's a way to curb anxiety, to curb fear.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not, if you're not alone, if there's someone out there who's looking out for you.
It reminds me of a spot in the Old Testament, in Deuteronomy 6. Moses is talking to the Israelites just before they enter the Promised Land. And he knows that he's not going to be entering into the Promised Land. He's been told already now that he's not going to be allowed. But he has a last word to them. And so what does he decide to say to them? He says, when you get to the Promised Land, with all the land of milk and honey and all the crops that you didn't plant but do reap, all the houses that you didn't build but are already there for you, all the great things, the cisterns that are dug and all of these things that you're going to find there. You're going to go there. It's already built for you. It's already there. When you get there, don't forget God. Don't forget, remember who it was that brought you out of Egypt. Talking about looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, who brought you out of Egypt, brought you to the Red Sea, parted the Red Sea, and brought you through the desert to this land, and now you'll have it. It's interesting that it's specifically when they have material wealth that they themselves didn't do. That's when they have to remember God. That's how the temptation will be for you to take that for granted, and you will just carry on as though all things are right and good. But you've got to remember and be grateful, I think, thankful for what God has accomplished. And if you remember those things, then how can you not be grateful?
Yeah, it's a weird paradox of the situation, almost like reality, that somehow gifts have the capacity to make you grateful and have the capacity to make you ungrateful.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah.
It's weird, you know. This is what happens, you know, like with bratty kids or something like that who basically have been given everything.
Yeah.
Right? And they, you know, like, you know, they're being given stuff that other kids can only dream of, but they're like totally ungrateful for it. Or another way that's more like in keeping, we hear this story all the time. A parent, like when they were growing up, they were like dirt poor and they had to struggle and fight and everything. And, you know, by the grace of God and by goodness and pluck and initiative and a little bit of luck, they made something of themselves. And now not only are they comfortable, they're kind of wealthy. You know, they you know, you hear this a lot of artists, okay? They'll say like they came from nothing. Like they were like, you know, Bill Gates, you know, did his computer thing out of like his like parents' garage or something like that. Or like I used to be, I was a home, like a world class comedian who like gets shows all over the world and makes tons and tons of money, started out going from club to club living out of his car,
sure,
something like that. So they know what it's like to be dirt poor, And so when they are not dirt poor, they're super thankful for it, right? They're very grateful for it. But then they have kids,
right?
And the kids are born into the wealth and the security and everything. And a common story amongst those parents is trying – it's like the struggle to teach their kids to be grateful for stuff, because for the kids, all the bounty is normal.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't I expect good things? And if I should – if you should expect it, then why should you be grateful for it?
Right.
You know, like that type of thing. So it's a weird paradox that bounty can make you grateful, but can also has the capacity to make you ungrateful at the same time.
Mm-hmm. When you take these things for granted, well, then maybe the thing we need to do is teach our next generation that practice of thankfulness. Thinking about Philippians 4 that says, I'm not going to get it right. Hold on.
Everything give thanks in the peace of God.
Yeah. Well, how does that verse start? I'm trying to think.
I think it's in everything give thanks.
Yeah, I guess I could look it up. But give me just a second here. It's such a famous bit, but my mind goes blank when I have to think of these things. Hmm. Okay. I'm thinking about that part of Philippians 4 that says, do not be anxious about anything, which is a shocking thing to say if you think about it.
Quite a statement.
Don't be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Okay, well, it's interesting that it's not just, don't be anxious about anything, go to God in prayer, and he'll give you what you want. It has that additional with thanksgiving in there. And I think that's essential, because it's a matter of recognizing who he is. It's kind of putting him in the right spot and putting ourselves in the right spot. I'm reminded of all of your the work we're doing on Dante now, how each person in Paradiso fits where he's supposed to be, right? You're in your right spot. You're kind of without envy of those above you or pride about those below you. You just are where you're supposed to be, and that's the right thing, right? Well, in that sense, we're in the right spot before God when we're on our knees, when he's God and we're not God, and we're dependent on him for everything. I heard a pastor say one time that the only thing you're guaranteed in this life is your next exhale. Mm-hmm. Every inhale is a gift. Well, if that's the case, then we got to spend a lot more time being grateful.
Yes.
You know, because everything that your eye falls on, everything that your heart longs for, everything that you have in your life, including the very breath in your your lungs, the fact that your heart is beating, is a gift. So we ought to be grateful for it.
I mean, there's that famous Chesterton quote, famous that a lot of people like to quote it, especially around Thanksgiving. He says that thanks are the highest form of thought, right?
Highest form of thought, yeah.
Yeah, wow. And I've heard that before, and people will say it amongst, you know, Chestertonites. And, you know, they'll be like, oh, thanks, as Chesterton said, thanks is the highest form of thought, and everyone smiles. It's like, yes, as they understand it. If you said that to anybody on the street, they would not know what the heck you're talking
about.
Like, what does thanks have to do with thought in the highest form? And when, it, you know, it reminds me of, like, the Babylon Bee. Babylon Bee posted a thing that had, like, a picture of, you know, Chesterton, like, one of the typical, like, images of him. And it had like a thing next to him that looked like a quote from Chesterton. But it says is feel free to continue to quote me without ever reading anything I wrote. You know, because that's what everyone loves to do. That quote comes from, I think, A Short History of England.
That's
like,
right.
The sixth chapter where he's talking about the Crusades of all things. but he starts out, as Chesterton usually does, he finds like tangents off of anything, but they still all somehow interconnect with what he's talking about. And what he's talking about is that Christianity fundamentally recognized humanity's utter humanity's essential.
Yep.
Christianity recognized that essential to our humanity is our dependence. That we're not independent.
Right.
We are utterly dependent. We did not create ourselves. We didn't raise ourselves. You know, we say this, oh, he raised himself. Well, you know, what he means is that's not what we mean. Like, that somebody raised them when they were a baby.
Right.
We didn't make ourselves. We didn't raise ourselves. We did not create, you know, even if we, like, grow, plant our own stuff, or grow our own food, we did not make this earth with all its seeds and all its flora and all its soil and all its, we did not make the sun and we did not make the weather. We are utterly dependent. We are utterly in need of receiving things so that we can do stuff.
Right.
I mean, it's like one of the differences between like God who can create ex nihilo is that he, like God creates ex nihilo out of nothing. What does that mean? That means he didn't have to receive anything in order to build it.
Right.
You could just do it. But we always have to receive.
Right.
And so the idea behind that thanks or the highest form of thought is that one of the most profound things you could do, and if you don't get this right, every other thinking is going to go wrong. One of the most profound things you could start with is that humanity is essentially dependent.
Right.
If you don't start there, then you're going to go wrong. If you go the other way and say that, no, we're fundamentally independent, if you go to the self-begot, self-raised, well, that's the satanic, which is the essence of irrational.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
So that's what he means when he says that.
It's denying the very practical reality that we have to have air to breathe, we have to have food to sustain us, we have to thank God for both of those things. Well, what I mean is we don't have to thank God for him. He seems to provide them for us whether we're grateful for him or not. Mm-hmm. But we have to thank him for those things. Those things can't be made by us. The farmer doesn't make the corn. You know, we think, well, that's where corn comes from. No, it doesn't. It comes from a mystery. So he can do all the things he knows he needs to do in order to grow a crop of corn, but the actual change from a seed into a stalk into an ear, that's magic. That's a talk about Chesterton. That's how Chesterton would look at that.
Right. Let me read to you. Let's put it in context. I'm going to read the chunk
from the history of England.
From that thing that comes out of.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to read like a lot, but with Chesterton, it always sounds like a lot. So everybody bear with me here, okay? Chesterton says, and this is like into the second paragraph.
Oh, this is where he talks about being doubled by wonder, right? Yeah, let's
hear
that.
The whole thing of it will make it clearer what he's trying to talk about. He said, in any intellectual corner of modernity, because Chesterton is always arguing against modernity, which is one of the reasons why he continues to be relevant, because we're still stuck in modernity in some ways. In any intellectual corner of modernity can be found such a phrase as I've just read in a newspaper controversy. Quote, salvation, like other good things, must not come from outside, end quote. In other words, if it's a good thing, we have to do it. It has to come from ourselves. To call a spiritual thing external and not internal is the chief mode of modernist excommunication.
Right.
But if our subject of study is medieval, not modern, we must pit against this apparent platitude the very opposite idea. Here we go. We must put ourselves in the posture of men who thought that almost every good thing came from outside, like good news. I confess that I am not impartial in my sympathies here, and that the newspaper phrase I quoted strikes me as a blunder about the very nature of life.
Yes, exactly.
I do not, in my private capacity, believe that a baby gets his best physical food by sucking his thumb. Nor that a man gets his best moral food by sucking his soul.
Oof.
And denying its dependence on God or other good things. I would maintain that thanks are the highest form of thought, and that gratitude is happiness doubled by wonder. This faith in receptiveness and in respect for things outside oneself is what he means by gratitude.
Yes.
All right. Yes. He says that that it makes a blunder to say that, well, good things must come from within. We have to do it ourselves. Is a blunder about the very nature of life. The nature of life is a faith in receptiveness.
That's right. And to be grateful, then, is a kind of recognition of reality.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what it means by it's the highest form of thought, because it's actually coinciding with a deep, profound fact of reality. You are dependent.
Yeah.
You have no right to claim that you are, again, self-begot, self-raised. That's the satanic, the irrational.
I think sometimes I sometimes think the best place to start in evangelistic work is to get the person you're speaking to. Let me start this again. Sometimes I think the best way to evangelize is to speak to somebody who doesn't believe in God about how he didn't create himself. To start there, you know, to say, you didn't choose your parents. Nobody can, right? You didn't make yourself. You came about by some other making. And so even from your very first moment of existence, you are dependent on something outside of yourself for sustenance. Certainly a baby is that way. Baby in the womb is that way, but even out of the womb for some several years, and I know some 30-year-olds that are still pretty dependent. Yeah. So, you know, but I mean, we think of independence as a good thing, right? And so we want to praise independence. But what we don't ever want to do is praise autonomy or auto, what would be the word? Sympathy or something, where you are your own God. You are your own
self-worship.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. What's the difference then between right and good independence? That is, growing up and becoming a mature adult on one hand, and being ungrateful or experiencing ingratitude.
Well, I mean, it might be paradoxically that the way you grow up and mature and thus can become an independent adult is reckoning with and learning to operate within the fact that you are utterly dependent. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like a child is almost in some way utterly ungrateful because they don't understand. Like they start by not understanding that what they are given is a gift, right? You know, a baby can be extremely ungrateful for what you do. They don't just comprehend it. It's just the world that they know. So it's almost like, in a weird paradox, learning to be grateful and thus recognizing dependence on good things and recognizing that reality is a part of actually learning how to be independent, so to speak. It's about, maybe it's not even the right word. Maybe we should stop talking about growing up, becoming independent, and just we should talk about becoming mature.
Okay.
Like maybe that's the word we need. It's not that they grow up and become independent. It's that they grow up and they mature. And it's maturity that helps them wander and navigate the world.
Mm-hmm.
And part of maturity is recognizing reality.
There you go. That's what I was about to say. But part of maturity is recognizing that you fit into this world in a particular way. What do we teach our children when they're very small? Mm-hmm. We teach them to say please, mm-hmm. and we teach them to say thank you,
right?
Those are the two sort of magic words that parents
They have no claim to anything.
Yeah.
And if it's given to them, and because they have no claim to anything, if they are given something, then it's a gift.
So what we're teaching then is a recognition of their place that way as a dependent being. And that only in maturity, that only becomes more apparent. It should be more apparent. And actually, I guess part of maturity is the transition from being someone who is dependent on others for everything to becoming independent of others, but to the point of becoming someone who can then provide for someone else. Right. So one of the things is we become adults and we have our own children and we look after our children, or we have our students that we look after, or we have a property that we have to look after, or those sorts of things.
Yeah.
We become a source of blessing for other people.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I just keep thinking about the parent thing. There's some parents who are probably built on the idea of making their kids independent, which, by the way, if you use the term independent, we're not shaming you.
No, of course not.
Because what you're actually doing, if you're doing it properly, by making them independent, you see the quotation marks I'm making with my hands, by making them independent, you're making them mature. That's what you mean. You're growing them up so they can actually function, all right? And what you mean by independent is they can go make their own house or something like that. Not that they believe that they somehow are God now and can make a house ex nihilo. But I feel like there are some people out there who have the kind of autonomy idea of independence. And so they can it's almost like they get exhausted with their kids and can't wait to kick them out of the house.
Right.
So they can finally learn to take care of themselves and stuff like that. And I can't help but wonder how that shapes the kid to view the world. You know, maybe it makes them very self-reliant and independent in that word, and thus they can get things done. But I wonder how it affects gratitude. Like, right. Would they be grateful at all? I mean, if it is a case, I mean, like you said, if you bought yourself a gift, are you thankful? I mean, yeah, okay, yeah. As Linus once said, Charlie Brown, at this point, the analogy somewhat breaks down. You could technically step back and say, well, yes, because the money came from this or that, the opportunity, blah, blah, blah. But just within the confines of this little situation, if somebody gives you a gift out of the blue, you're grateful.
Right.
If you go buy something for yourself, you're not necessarily grateful because you're like, well, I did it myself. So, really became a fully self-reliant, independent person, what happens to gratitude?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it goes away, but I can't help but wonder. On the flip side...
Well, by definition, it has to have that outside reference point.
Right. On the flip side, you know, the kids who never leave and stay remain dependent on their parents, it's not that dependence is bad, it's that they never mature. It's the flip side. They remain a baby, which we mean by immaturity. The problem is that they never did learn that they're dependent.
Mm.
They actually think that this is the way that, you know, I don't know. Does that make sense? If we're continuing if we're trying to stay consistent here, the people who remain dependent on their parents are the ones who never really learned that you're dependent. Like these things are gifts, and therefore you ought to be grateful for them rather than that. I feel like there's something connected to that.
Well, there's also the idea of switching your attachment from your parents to God. So part of maturity is saying, I am, as a child, I have to learn gratitude from my parents so that when I become mature, I'm able to look, in a sense, past my parents to the God who provided even for them.
Yeah.
So now I'm attaching myself to them. It's not I'm giving up my dependence, becoming independent. It's that I'm, in a sense, moving my dependence to a far larger source. And actually then looking back, you can say, I'm even grateful as an adult to God for my parents. They were a gift too, see? And that's very hard to do. Most of us have, again, I don't want to cast asparagus at my parents, but no parents are perfect, right?
Yeah.
And so it's easy if you don't switch your attention, your attachments to God, then all you do is become resentful of that the parent actually didn't provide for you. You kind of turn your parents into an idol, and an idol becomes a dumb thing. It's something that can't actually satisfy you. Mm-hmm. Only God himself can do that. You know, one of the things we do with the Center for Western Studies is we go on this trip in the spring to other countries. And one of the reasons that we do that is so that students can get a sense for a larger world, you know, a bigger culture, a bigger world, different cultures. People live differently, maybe in different kind of circumstances, eat different foods, whatever, speak different languages. But one of the things I like about that is that it stretches their minds to see and understand and appreciate how other people live and work. Well, that may not seem directly connected to thankfulness, but it is. And it's in this way, I think. The fact that getting around others' cultures and into other cultures and trying to see the world through others' eyes helps you see the outside better, whatever that outside is that we need to refer to when we are grateful. And Chesterton even talks about it in that very same paragraph you were talking about. He says, in nothing is the modern German more modern or more mad than in his dream of finding a German name for everything. That is, trying to take in the whole world into his own language and understand it only from his own language.
Right. To make everything German.
To make everything German. Or in other words, he says, in nothing is the modern German more modern or more mad than in his dream of finding a German name for everything. Eating his language, as it were. The reference back to sucking his thumb or sucking his soul. Yeah. But he says, eating his language, or in other words, biting his tongue. Another great Chestertonian.
Oh my gosh.
And in nothing were the medievals more free and sane than in their acceptance of names and emblems from outside their most beloved limits. The monastery would often not only take in the stranger, but often almost canonize him. A mere adventurer was enthroned and thanked as if he had really come in as a knight errant. and passionately patriotic communities were often, more often than not, had a foreigner for a patron saint, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
He says, thus crowds of saints were Irishmen, but St. Patrick was not an Irishman. He was a Brit. He was an Englishman.
From elsewhere.
Thus, as the English gradually become a nation, they left the numberless Saxon saints, in a sense, behind them, passed over by comparison not only the sanctity of Edward, but the solid fame of Alfred, their own men, and invoked a half-mythical hero striving in an eastern desert against an impossible monster.
Yeah, that's St. George is what he's referring to.
Exactly.
Who was, in history, was a Roman.
He wasn't an Englishman.
He wasn't an Englishman, right?
Right.
It's this idea of, like, yeah, being able to get outside of yourself somehow, outside of the familiar, makes you somehow grateful for what you have in some ways.
And it helps you see it for what it is. I find myself, as I get older, praying prayers of thankfulness for things like my plumbing.
Yeah.
You know? Basic stuff. The fact that we can turn on a tap and have running water that's clean come into our house is pretty astonishing when you think about it. I'm grateful for that. Or the heat and the air conditioning are working, you know. That's a tremendous blessing. People that I've never met invented those things, and I'm just living with the benefits of it, yeah. You know.
I mean, people have made the argument.
Eyeglasses or things like that. You know?
Yeah, people have made the argument, especially recently. I invoke his name with caution. Jordan Peterson makes this point often.
Oh, does he?
That civilization doesn't function without gratitude. Because if you
it's
don't.
It's the glue that holds things together.
It's the glue that holds everything together. Because if you don't appreciate the fact that you didn't build this,
yes.
That you were handed it over. First of all, this is something I wanted to mention earlier about, like, you know, the kid who stays at home all the time. He's dependent on his parents, but the reason he remains dependent in that bad sense on his parents is not because dependence is bad, but because his immaturity doesn't let him recognize that he's actually dependent.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, and when I said that, we kind of moved on, but I was thinking, I was like, man, that didn't explain that well. And I think what I'm thinking is that imagine if some, like, 35-year-old failure to launch actually became grateful for his parents.
Mm-hmm.
Like, suddenly recognized, wow, I didn't build this basement,
yeah.
You know,
right.
Or these video games or these, I don't cook my own meals. It's like, it's all been given to me, right?
Yeah.
By my parents.
Yeah.
Wow. And like, when you recognize that, there are certain things that follow from that. Namely, you recognize, well, if they gave it to me, that's something they could have kept for themselves. That money they spent or that time they spent, they could have done it for themselves, but they gave it to me.
Good.
They sacrificed for me.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And when you recognize a sacrifice was there, something happens. You feel responsible, right? You feel responsible. You feel obligated for something. It's that thing. It's that weird phenomenon. They use it in like sitcoms a lot, but it's like people are like, no, don't give me a present out of the blue. Now I got to give you one. You know, it's like this weird sense that if somebody gives you a gift, you have to give them back.
Yeah.
Which some people get annoyed at because we want to be able to give people gifts just because. But there is this weird impulse that if somebody gave me something, that I have no claim to, but they gave it to me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Part of gratitude is recognizing that that's a sacrifice on their part, and sacrifice makes you feel obligated.
Yeah.
And if you're a kid, if you're a 35-year-old living in your parents' basement, you know, and you finally become grateful, it will lead you to feel obligated to the sacrifice. And maybe one of the obligations you feel is maybe I shouldn't be a freeloader anymore. Maybe I shouldn't be sucking all that money and stuff away from them. Maybe I should get on my own two feet. So you can see how gratitude actually can create the maturity that actually leads you out.
Yes.
Right?
Brilliant.
It's like if you stop being grateful, you know, then you won't grow up. But if you stop being grateful, then you stop maintaining things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like if you're not it's like somehow being grateful for something makes you recognize the fragility of things. You know, that.
And the value of things.
And thus, the value of things. You know, you're thankfully for your plumbing. I mean, I'm sitting there and I try to remind myself of that all the time, you know, when, like, you know, the power goes out.
Yeah.
But I can still wash my hands because the water is on something separate. I'm thinking, my gosh, can you imagine that the power and the water and the heat just all went out for like a month?
Yeah.
It would be pandemonium, right? It's like. But that's just it. It's like, I remember I started watching this show yesterday where, like, one of the central, like, thematic elements is a kid disappears, right? He's like a 12-year-old kid. And the way the show is set up is, like, he, like, joins a bunch of teenagers to go into the woods to do something, and something takes him.
Oh, okay.
Well, one of the teenagers is his older brother. He's like 15 or 16. It's a typical, like, older brother, younger brother, especially teenage older brother to a sort of older kid, younger brother. You know, the older brother kind of, like, smacks him around and is just kind of like, yeah, whatever, and calls him names and stuff like that, until his younger brother gets kidnapped.
Oh, yeah.
Or disappears, and then suddenly the older brother, like, goes into, like, his bedroom and just, like, punches the wall multiple times because he's so angry.
Mm.
And he's, like, utterly depressed and sad because suddenly his brother being gone, the fact that his brother might not be there,
yeah,
suddenly strikes him with how valuable his brother really
never
is.
Never occurred to him before.
It never occurred to him before. When you recognize something as a gift, it's almost like you recognize the fact that it is reminds you that it might not have been.
Yeah, yeah, right. Right? And I think that leads to an interesting misunderstanding in our own day and age about welfare, because I think it's tempting to want to elide charity and welfare together. Mm. In other words, it doesn't the concern is that there's a poor person in need. Let's be sure that he gets what he needs. But it matters where it comes from. If it comes from the government, it comes through taxation, and it's something that the person who receives it, in a sense, doesn't have to be grateful for. At least he thinks that it's a right. It's a government thing that is given to everybody who's in his situation.
Right. There's no reason to say please and thank you for something that's your right.
That's your right, exactly. Just like you wouldn't say when your boss, you know, gives you a paycheck, you don't say, well, you might say thank you because it's a nice thing to do, but you earned that money, right? You earned it yourself. That's yours, and all he's doing is giving you what's rightfully yours.
Right.
But that's a different matter than giving you something that you didn't earn, right? And so charity maybe provides for that person's need too, but the person knows that it was given freely and it didn't have to be given at all.
Yeah.
And that's a hugely different thing. So I think if we focus our society's attention on only the need and not how the need is being fulfilled, then we actually can shoot ourselves in the foot as a society, because we teach people not to be grateful.
I know. It's one of the things that makes the discussion about social services.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, frustrating to talk about, because somebody's in need and we want to help it. And I feel like people on like the right side and the conservative side of like social service issues, they've used the grateful thing, the gratitude thing before, that, you know, if somebody receives a government handout, that they won't be grateful, right? And somehow that means that they won't keep up whatever they give. And it always feels like it's tacked on as like some kind of school marmish moralism, like, you know, but they won't be thankful. You know, it's like, well, who cares? They're starving. Like,
right.
Give them food.
That's what's
or
important.
Give them shelter, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like there's a sense in which gratitude matters, and there's something actually dangerous in telling people that food, shelter, and security is your right.
Yes.
Not that they don't need it, and not that we shouldn't give it to them. That's not what's dangerous. What's dangerous is saying that it's a right. You have a right to free money.
Sure.
Basically, you have a right to. Because like I said, you don't have to say please and thank you for something. You don't have to be grateful at all for something that's your right.
Right.
You feel
right,
absolutely right. Zero obligation about it. Because it's like, well, it's mine anyway. Why shouldn't I use it? You know, we're such atheistic people. Like, we don't think we're like unconsciously atheistic people. That in materialistic people, that we don't reckon on the spiritual, all right?
Right.
We don't reckon on spiritual realities, and as such, we don't think gratitude matters, because it's a social convention to say thank you, and we have no conception that gratitude is actually a part of spiritual reality, and that has an effect. It has, I mean, as the Harvard Medical Study thing, it has a physical effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it can also have social effects. If you have a whole bunch of people who think that handouts are their right,
yeah,
and thus are ungrateful for them, are you seriously going to sit there and say that that's not going to have negative consequences of some kind?
Right. Well, it seems like on the front end that if there's the deficit of the provision already, right? They don't have the food or the shelter or whatever they need. If you heap on top of them also that they have to be grateful, it seems like you're just being cruel.
Yeah.
Right? Why should I lay that burden on them too? Just get them the food. Just get them the shelter. Just, you know.
Right.
But what we've been saying all along, and this is not the point, by the way, of our discussion about Thanksgiving. I just bring it up as an interesting side note that we assume that the two things could be the same because all we're trying to do is meet the material needs of somebody. But as you say, if we reject the spiritual part of it, if we ignore it, then what we're doing is ignoring reality. We are all dependent, as we've been saying. Yeah. And so to learn not to be grateful for something is a damage that we do to somebody.
It's like an unintended consequence.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
It's like the issue is not give welfare or not, or be charitable or not.
Yeah.
The issue is how can we do charity or do welfare in such a way that it doesn't sabotage gratitude?
Right, right.
Right? And that's a completely different question.
And doesn't it seem like, though, if I say, well, I don't want to do it by way of the taxation, I want to do it by way of charity because the guy will not be grateful for what he's gotten. All it sounds like is I'm saying, I just want him to be grateful to me.
Yeah, and it sounds really snotty.
It sounds horrible. It sounds like I want to be superior. I want to be important. I want to be,
right.
You know,
which
and
is,
I want him on his knees thanking me and groveling.
Which is, again, the unconscious.
Who wants that? Nobody wants that, really.
Which is, again, the unconscious atheism and materialism. We don't reckon that on the part of even the person who sincerely says, well, I want them to do a charity because I want them to be grateful. Because proper. No, it's not that it's proper, that it's good for your soul.
Yeah, exactly.
To be grateful. And it's good for the society if it's good
and
for your soul.
And by extension, I think it's possible to say, why does God insist that I have to be grateful to him for these things too? I shouldn't have to do that. You know, I don't want to be. God just wants me to be groveling all the time. He just wants me to feel like a worm and I'm not important and,
right.
You know, I'm not an equal. Well, you're not an equal to God. You're certainly an equal to me,
yeah.
Right? No matter who, before God, all of us are equal that way. But between us and God directly, we simply aren't equal.
Yeah.
He's infinite and we're not. Sorry.
Right.
It's one of those things. And he's created us. We owe him our very existence. So even from the, like we said, from the womb, from creation, we didn't make ourselves. We created nothing, ex nihilo, as you say. It's not something that we made. It's that we owe our next breath inhale to God. And so we ought to be living as though that were the reality. So Thanksgiving is essential. So this applies to Thanksgiving, but also the holiday of Thanksgiving. But I think it applies to Advent and Christmas especially, as we're walking into it. Because in the end, the gift, not to sound too Sunday school about it, but there really was a gift, right? And
yeah.
the gift of Jesus himself to us is the ultimate in gift. The gift of eternal life is right. Something that we truly have to be thankful for.
God gave himself. I
mean, yeah, he didn't
really
hold back.
Kind of nothing higher.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so in a sense, we are imitating him when we give gifts to each other, and we are imitating him when we're thankful for what we've been given, because within the Trinity, the Father and the Son have that kind of giving of each of themselves to each other and gratefully receiving from each other, and that's actually at the source of what love is. It's the ability to give and the ability to receive. Sometimes it's harder to receive a gift than it is to give it. But anyway, I think this applies. This kind of conversation applies to life in general, and specifically between the holidays of Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Well, I mean, it's why Chesterton would say thanks is the highest form of thought, because it applies to so much, because it's tapping into some deep part of reality,
right?
Right, the way it actually works. So it attaches to like everything. Like you can think of it.
And I like what he says about it including wonder. It doubles itself, he says, by wonder. And I think wonder is an essential aspect of Thanksgiving. In order to be grateful to that that's outside of us, we have to be astonished a little bit.
Yeah.
He didn't have to give us the charity that he gave us.
Yeah, it's happiness doubled by wonder, because you're happy, but you're happy because something outside of you has done something great.
Right. Right,
and you're amazed. You're amazed that you're happy. Your happiness is doubled by wonder, because your happiness was not made by you; it was given to you.
Yeah, Yeah.
And so that's like, that's what thankfulness is happiness doubled by wonder, because you recognize your happiness was a gift.
So does being thankful turn us into sappy, sentimental, unambitious people?
What do you mean?
I just think that sometimes people are reluctant to be thankful because it seems saccharine and self-serving and like a, I mean, I hate to pick on Hallmark, but all the time, but a little bit.
We were not paid by Hallmark's enemies to guess.
No, but I mean, the sort of sappy, sentimental kind of life, you know, makes me think, well, I don't really have to be ambitious or accomplish anything. I just have to be thankful for what I have and kind of pull in my horns. And
I'm thankful for so little. You know, it's like this. Does gratitude create like a wrong kind of contentment where you just like, well, I'm just satisfied with that? And the answer is no, because we already mentioned what the answer is. And it's the kid in the basement who finally gets grateful to his parents.
Yeah.
You recognize these things as gifts, but if they're gifts from somebody, that means a sacrifice was made to give it to you, and that sacrifice creates a sense of obligation. Like, well, what am I going to do now?
And maybe it leads to deciding to clean up the basement.
Right.
Or to like, wash the dishes.
Or get a job.
Get a job,
get
exactly.
a job and maybe start contributing in some way. I mean,
that's right.
The truth is that real gratitude may actually be the thing that spurs true ambition.
That's right.
Because it might be ambition that's pointed, that's aimed at, not aimed at, well, yeah, it's inspired by something outside of yourself. You know, I want to live up to this gift that's been given to me.
And if you recognize that gift as love, don't you eventually want to be able to do that for someone else? And that's what we said was maturity, the ability to give yourself away to someone else, too, not just to collect things for yourself, but to give them away. That's right. Well, maybe we ought to wrap up. Have we got some... recommendations?
Well, I guess I'll just read. Now that I read it, I got stuck reading more of it because I was like, wow. I guess G.K. Chesterton's A Short History of England.
Short History of England,
I mean,
yeah.
Is it historically accurate or not? I have no idea, but it's engaging and it's thoughtful. And Chesterton does such a good job. I have to say this because like a friend of mine showed me like some comments by a friend of his that showed some Chesterton hating. And so I feel.
Really?
I feel, oh yeah. It's like. I mean, there's a. I've heard like an argument from someone I knew who I greatly respect say that he felt Chesterton was more rhetoric than logic. You know, he's a lot of
wow.
He's a lot of purpley prose and a lot of great turns of phrase, but he doesn't really have any substance to him.
Ooh.
And so I guess I'm feeling extra defensive.
Uh huh.
Chesterton is one of the things he's so good at is like everything connects for him. So like what you think are tangents. To him, and if you pay attention, all connect together into one big, long argument.
Uh-huh.
And it's great to like see his mind at work and sort of get into the stream of his mind and see how if you really have a logos, if you really have some sort of organizing principle, and the organizing principle is Christ, it's amazing how it actually creates a kind of organic order where everything fits and everything flowers out naturally from the thing. And that's what his mind kind of is.
Yes.
And so I just feel like impelled now. So I have to recommend a Chesterton thing. And so I will recommend one I haven't even read all the way. But I'm the part I've read, I'm like, you need to read it. So go find Chesterton's A Short History of England.
Mm-hmm. And I'll recommend, since we're talking about A Short History of England, I'll recommend another History of England.
Is it short?
No, it's long.
Yes.
But it reads like a novel.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I bet you do. Winston Churchill.
Churchill
wrote a four-volume work called The History of the English-Speaking Peoples, and it is marvelous. It's great to read. It reads like a novel. In both of these gentlemen's hands, the English language is treated with great respect and appreciation. Mm-hmm. Both of them were masters of writing. So if you want a good approach, there are people that would argue that Churchill wasn't a historian, too. But there's so much there to be read that is worth looking at. Two good books on the history of England.
That's all we got time for today. We thank you for listening in. Grateful for you. If you have any, questions or comments or anything... Anything you want to say about gratitude, any thoughts you had, anything you want to ask us about this topic or any other, please feel free to email us, send your emails, your requests, questions, submissions, death threats, and scurrilous remarks.
Yes, all of those are welcome.
director@centerws.com, and we'll be happy to cull through those and pick out the ones we like.
And answer them.
And so this has been From the Center. We'll see you guys next time.